Good morning. This is Trace Blue, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling, and we'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for March 19th, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I am cast member Chip Hasenfly.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Yes, Chip. Yes, this is the Tuesday after my musical is over. And yes, that's why my voice sounds like I'm exhausted, because I'm exhausted.
Well, Steve, you survived another year. You're better for it, and you're ready to move on to next.
I love it. I complain about it a lot, but I absolutely love putting on stage productions, working with young people, showing them the skills of performance art that they love doing this hard thing that we do. 3 months worth of work pays off with one spectacular weekend, and they learn so much, not about singing and dancing. They learn about working together on a big product, a huge thing that they work together, they get over their differences, they get over the hurdles, and they make it happen.
It's a team sport, Steve.
Oh, yes. It is the same things that we learn on the basketball diamond that we learn in the stage. Sorry.
Exactly. Something like that, Steve.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And you know what? I got to watch a movie this week, even though I was in the middle of production. I finally saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Well, it was released in December, Steve. So, you know, at some point we have to see it. But my goodness, how in the world did you find time to see this movie?
I honestly cannot answer that question. I don't know how I did it. But one night I was just needing to watch something, and so I bought a digital copy of this movie through Amazon, and I watched it, and I agree with the critics and you, this is a really good movie.
It is. They use a special type of production to make this. If I remember correctly, more frames per second, which allowed it to have a sort of really fluid look, and also they use a lot of stylized cartooning. So obviously it has a very unique
look too. It's so unique. All of the different spider people from all the different spider verses, they each have their own distinctive look. And that old-fashioned comic book look where you can see the dots of the art, and then every once in a while it phase shifts just enough so it kind of looks like it's supposed to be 3D, you got the reds and the blues that separate. That is some brilliant artwork.
And, you know, of course, John Mulaney's sitting there as Spider-Ham. That always makes it fun.
He is a real up-and-comer, isn't he?
One day he'll make it, Steve.
Maybe he can get a spot on Saturday Night Live after all this time.
He's amazing. He's done
some great stuff. He is one of my favorite comedians working right now. And yes, he does a great job as Spider-Ham. And Chip, you've got a guest with us today. This is Troy Jaster, the host of Your Dad's Podcast.
Welcome, Troy.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. Excited to be here.
We're glad to have you. Thanks for being a part of the show. Chip, you and Troy got a chance to see Free Solo, the documentary from last year. Tell us what you thought about that one.
Well, I was sitting down and talking to Troy last night, and Troy said, oh, you need to see this movie. So, of course, streaming allows many fantastic things to happen. And we got to see this movie about this gentleman who ended up ultimately climbing El Capitan, which is a mountain for those who don't know that. And he did it without any types of ropes or any types of harnesses.
Completely free climbing, just his hands and his feet going up the side of a mountain.
Yeah, and it's virtually straight up, Steve. It's one of the more challenging, in fact, it may be the most challenging climb out there. And once again, we have an experienced person who decides that this is what he would like to do. I think this is a study on male psychology, on the ability to have a I guess, a goal and to achieve it. And then also his relationship. He was a young man. His father had passed away. It doesn't seem like his mother showed a lot of affection to him. He received some life insurance money when his father passed away and basically quit school and became a climber. What do you have to add with this, Troy?
I will say the first time I've actually seen it twice already because it's such an amazing movie. The first time that I saw it, I watched it in an IMAX theater, which I think it still is in IMAX right now, at least some places around the country. If you have the opportunity, I would absolutely spend the money to go see it in IMAX. I was watching it with a friend of mine. And every once in a while, here's the funny thing about the movie is that you already know the ending. Like, okay, here, spoiler alert, he made it to the top. He didn't die. He didn't fall off. And everybody knows that because it starts the movie with him eclipsing the top. Yet you're watching this and, you know, you almost expect him at some point to lose a grip or slip or fall off. And it is so high stress, but in an amazing way. And so my friend and I were watching the movie at the IMAX and, you know, every once in a while I would look around just at other people in the theater and you could see people kind of shielding their eyes and cowering in their seats and squirming because it's just so intense. I mean, my hands were literally sweating watching the movie. It was so incredible.
That's what a good movie can do, right? You are a part of this action. You know that this guy's all right, but at the same time, you are feeling all of that adrenaline that he is showing you on the screen.
If you've ever attempted any type of climbing, you know the stress it puts on your body. And that's one of the, in fact, this week I ended up doing a climbing wall. There's just a different feeling. There's an intensity to it. I do recommend this is a lot of fun. It's family friendly and highly recommended. I would say probably 80 out of 100.
Opening this week, we've got some great movies coming our way. The first one, probably the biggest release maybe of 2019 so far, is a movie simply called Us. This is Jordan Peele's follow-up to the award-winning Get Out from 2017.
Get Out was such a wonderful film. I'm looking forward to this. I'm going to be there opening night.
Awesome. This is true horror, from the trailer at least. This is an absolute horror film. The reviews have spoiled it for me a little bit, that this is not exactly horror. There's something more to it, but I don't know what the more is. The people who saw it at South by Southwest last week absolutely raved about it. Frank Oz wrote in his Twitter, "This is a really scary movie with an underbelly of profundity, a movie that shines a dark spotlight on our duality and strikes at our souls." That's amazing from Frank Oz.
There's always a big twist in these types of movies. I recommend any person that has a joy of watching Twilight Zone, something of that nature, to go out there and see this film. This looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Which reminds us that Jordan Peele is starting up his Twilight Zone show that's coming in 2 weeks. That's coming on April 1st. And I really look forward to what we're going to see from the new Twilight Zone. How about Troy?
Well, as we'll find out later, I've got a couple little boys at home, so watching movies is at a premium for me. So as I did get to see Free Solo, I don't get to see a ton of other movies.
Okay. It's got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes as of this moment, so there's a lot of people who are really excited about this one. There's a drama coming out called Hotel Mumbai. This is the story of the Mumbai attacks from 2008.
And while a sad story, this looks like it's an interesting movie. I look forward to seeing this. If I don't see it in the theater, I'll probably see it streaming.
The fact that it's a true story of terrorists invading a hotel and the hotel staff trying to keep everyone safe is really intriguing. It reminds me of Die Hard, but the fact that it's a real story is a little more terrifying than Die Hard.
Yes, and it's not a Christmas story, Steve.
Right, this is not a Christmas movie. It's coming out in March. There is a movie called Dragged Across Concrete. This is the story of two policemen who get suspended, and so they decide the best route is to delve into the criminal underworld to get some money for their work in the police force. This is a strange concept.
Well, Steve, it's got Mel Gibson and Don Johnson in it. I mean, the 80s are screaming to you.
Yeah, it's a buddy cop film with Mel Gibson and Vince Vaughn. So I think that this one has legs. I think that it's going to be good. But boy, I'm really trepidatious about the storyline.
Well, there's always streaming.
That's your solution to everything.
Exactly.
Book it, book it, book it. Book it, book it, book it. Book it. Book it. Book it.
Brings us to our book at our book of the week. You got a chance to read the book from Tim Gunn, who is the host of the Emmy Award winning Project Runway. So this is a style book?
This is not. This is a book about Tim Gunn's backstory as being a teacher, and also the difference between being a teacher and being a mentor. So for the last week, I've been down in Orlando. I've been working with young people. This was my preparation to work with them on leadership and the idea of mentoring. So Tim Gunn's book is a really nice, quick read and gives some insights on a little bit about his backstory and how he worked with young people and basically how he grew as a leader and as a mentor.
The title of this one is The Natty Professor, a masterclass on mentoring, motivating, and making it work. So tell us what you've learned about mentoring and motivating while you're down there.
Well, Tim Gunn spent a lot of time working with students. He was a teacher for many, many years. And being a teacher means in many ways you're hands-on and working with children to or young people to gain those skills. And he talked a little bit about how that eventually changes when he got to Project Runway, where when it started out, maybe someone didn't have a skill. Maybe someone didn't have an expertise on doing something. And he would sit down and maybe thread some kind of machine for one of the people who were competing. The producer ended up pulling him out of that and saying, hey, listen, you can't do that. If you did that for one, you'd have to do that for all. And so that's where the distinction comes in, that when you're mentoring someone, you're expecting a certain set of skills or that they will acquire those skills. And it's a little bit different than working as a teacher, where you're right in there. And your goal is to teach them how to use that machine.
Yeah, as a teacher, I understand the difference between teaching somebody a skill and mentoring them to find more information on their own, to master something that maybe I'm not showing them how to do it, but I'm giving them the skills to become the master of some activity, like putting on a stage play. Did I teach them how to act, how to dance, how to sing? Yeah, sure, of course I did. But I'm also telling them they need to figure out some of the skills that are involved with production.
And that's where we grow up. We recognize also either we hire an expert or we research and learn how to do a certain skill.
And that's the difference between teaching and mentoring. All teachers are also at the same time mentoring, but we're specifically targeting certain skills.
The book expands beyond that. He talks a little bit about how projects they're originally set out to be maybe something that's a positive or a carrot can go wrong. They basically can lose their way. One of the projects he talks about at one of the schools he worked at was where they were bringing in a designer, and that the famous designer would work with the children or work with the young people on any type of clothing at the time. Ultimately, it became about the designer they were bringing in, working around their schedule. But what was happening is that the school at the time was losing what they were really doing. They were teaching the young people how to do that skill, how to put together the projects. And basically, the ultimate solution to that was to change the focus from the designer they were bringing in, which the young people were very excited about it at the time, to highlighting the seniors, the pieces they were able to put together. And then above that, they had to select only specific pieces from those people. So it gets even tighter as far as the competition to do it. The young people responded better to it. It met the mission, the school better. And once again, just showed that it's always important to review what you're currently doing to make sure that the aim of it is why we do what we do. Fascinating book. It's not a long read, but truly a nice lesson for me to learn as I was coming down here to work with these young people.
And goal setting is an important part of this conversation, making sure that you know where the finish line is. And those skills that it takes to get there might be teaching moments, and they might be discovery moments. You might have a student who actually finds a different way to do it, but what you're teaching them is the skill of wanting to find that way, that motivation to get to that finish line.
And what you're really talking about is empowering those young people. This book talks about it. I've experienced it this week. It's really important to let the process work. And then if it gets off course, basically to redirect it to an aim, but ultimately allow the user to experience the life in the timing so it becomes important to them. It reveals itself when it needs to reveal itself.
And identifying when you're off track is a real skill, to know, to notice that you're not on the right track toward your goal is something that I work with my middle schoolers all the time. They might not identify that they are off task until I say, hey, what are you doing right now? And when they answer with, I don't know, or nothing, I say, well, there's your problem. You need to be doing something.
Which explains why you're a good teacher, Steve, and why the students end up resonating so well with you.
I try my best.
You do a very good job at this. I look forward to your book one day.
I look forward to writing my book. I'm sure that I've got a book or two in me of how to make these things happen. But Tim Gunn's got his. It's called The Natty Professor, a masterclass on mentoring, motivating, and making it work. You can find it in our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
You're down in Orlando, Florida, basking in the sun. You've got Troy Jaster, the host of Your Dad's podcast, down there with you. His podcast is amazing. It's Troy and his friend Seamus Nelson. They met through their wives. Troy has a real estate team in San Antonio, Texas, and is a public speaker on topics like time management and success. As a fan of podcasts and recognizing the lack of podcasts aimed at fathers, Troy and Seamus seek to fill this niche and talk about being dads. There are millions of ways to be a dad. Between the two of them, Troy and Seamus are figuring out those ways. It's about perspective, not prescriptive. So why don't you have some conversation here with Troy? I want to find out more about this podcast.
Well, welcome, Troy, again. And let's start off by telling, just tell us a little bit about your dad's podcast.
Right. So we started the Your Dad's podcast, actually Seamus and I, not Seamus. It's a common mistake. No worries about it.
He
gets it all the time. In fact, that was in one of our episodes, was naming kids, and we talked about that. So Seamus and I started this podcast. I guess it was the end of 2017 that we started to, just bang around in our heads about what we could put together. And we've been actually on air for right about a year. Have 20 or 30 episodes that have been released. We release a couple every month. And, as you said in the intro, this is the whole idea, was that there's so much mom content out there, mommy blogs, mommy books, mommy everything. And there isn't as much of a focus on dads. And so that's where we said, you know what, I have two young boys, Seamus had two young girls, and we had seemingly a lot of content just in that fact. And so that's where this came from.
All right. So what changes when a man becomes a father?
Everything probably is the short answer. people would tell me before we had kids, how everything changes, and you almost don't remember what life is like prior to kids anymore. And, it seems all cliche, but it's all truth. I mean, I can't, I honestly, I can't argue with that. It's just everything changes, you know. I certainly noticed, you know, myself, I wouldn't say slowing down, but just, you know, reassessing for sure, you know, the decisions that you make on a daily basis, because it's not just making that decision on behalf of myself or making the decision on that on behalf of myself and my wife, but now it's making that decision on behalf of all of us.
In fact, if you could go back in time, what wisdom would you give yourself about being, I guess, your future self, about being a father?
Oh, wow. Tough one. What wisdom would I give? You know, I think I'll answer it this way. One of the best pieces of advice that I got, and I believe it was right before we had our first child, was a relative of mine made the mention something along the lines of, you're going to get a lot of people who try to give you advice, who try to tell you how to parent. And the thing to remember is, whatever decision you make is the right one. Whatever you feel is right for you, go with it, and it's the right thing, and have confidence.
And just sort of make that decision and just feel comfortable that,
right,
that you made that decision.
Exactly, exactly. And also know that what's good for me is not good for you. What's good for my family is not necessarily good for your family. And priorities are different for everybody. And you know, I'm not here to judge what, you know, what my family does versus what yours does. All I know is what, you know, I'm an expert on my own opinion.
Okay, that's a good point. So tell us about, what types of topics do you cover in your podcast?
So we basically look for, most of the time we're trying to either topic base or interview base it, and we just want to see a bunch of different perspectives. We've had different guests. The most recent one, if you looked at our interview that came out just a few days ago, that was a father. He and his wife have three kids, and he by trade is a trauma therapist that specializes mainly in PTSD. Clients. Mm-hmm. And so we talked a lot about that. The one before,
it's post-traumatic stress disorder,
right?
For those,
right? And so, so that was one of them. The most recent one we talked to one just before that. That was he classified a serial entrepreneur, and so very high achiever, big goal setter. And we talked about how does that translate into York, you know, into his kids. We've had an expectant dad. We've just all basically anybody that has a unique perspective, a unique voice. That's what we look for, and that's what we, you know, hope to keep on bringing out.
Well, I've got to see sit through some of your public speaking, and books are a foundation of your message. Tell us about what types of books you like to read.
Yeah, I'm a huge reader. I really am big on personal development. You know, I'll totally say that I stole this from one of my previous guests on my show, but I'm just trying every day to be the best version of myself. So personal development books are really big for me. And just beyond that, honestly, anything that I'm curious about, every once in a while, even though, as I mentioned, personal development is probably the biggest one, every once in a while, I'll throw in something just for interest and just for fun. And so actually right now I'm reading Without You, There Is No Us. And it is a chronicle of a young lady who went to North Korea and taught in a school that was some of the elite boys of that country, and okay, just her experiences. And so that's been really, really fascinating.
What insights did you gain from that reading?
Well, I'm about a third of the way through it right now. It's just I'm really fascinated by the. I guess it's just so strange seeing a country like that that is so regimented and so there's so much behind the veil.
Mm-hmm.
And her just kind of getting to have a little bit of an insight into what's going on behind the veil, man, that's just, it's really interesting to me. And at the same time, it's kind of sad.
Sure. Is it because it's so regimented, it doesn't allow them to...
It doesn't allow them to think. It doesn't allow them to, she talked at one point about how the boys just didn't even know how to play and have fun outside of just, you know, I think she mentioned they would play soccer and basketball. Those are the big sports of North Korea, for the kids at least. But, you know, they don't watch TV unless it's state-run television. They don't read books unless it's what they're given. And so she just said that it was strange because they didn't really know how to expressively play. It was so interesting.
Sure. All right. So you're a busy person, as most of us are. How did you find time to read?
Yeah. So I do all of my reading really early in the morning. There's a great book by an author named John Acuff. One of the things that he brought out in his book called Quitter was the idea of being selfish at 5 a.m. So I've adopted that. So I do all of my reading from usually about 5:15 to 6:15 in the morning. The only two things that I do that early in the morning are read or workout. That's it. So I intentionally get up at 5 a.m. every weekday so that I can do one of those two things, because the rest of my house is not usually awake until probably 6:15 or so. And I have yet to hear my wife or kids complain that I'm not spending enough time with them at 5 a.m. So that is my time to be selfish. And that's what I choose to do.
Now, when you were going through college, you trained to become a teacher.
Correct. Yep.
And you've changed careers since then. But how does your training as a teacher help you when working with your children and professionally? How does it work?
Yeah. So I'll start with the end on that one. Professionally, it's really amazing. I feel like so much of what I do in real estate is simply educating my clients. I'm not going to be able to actually sell anything. I'm not going to sell the house for them. What I'm going to do is educate them on the process and let them know all of the pros and cons and everything that comes with that, that property or that situation, and give them all of the information they have so that they can make the best decision. And then it's ultimately up to them. Mm-hmm. So that's the part professionally where it's hugely beneficial. It's been hugely beneficial. At home is a tricky one, because my wife also is a teacher. She has been a teacher for about 14 years. And there are times where we were just talking about this last night, where she probably more than I, because she's more in the classroom still every day, but where she will kind of think or react or do something with our kids, where she's kind of has her teacher hat on.
Sure.
And she's analyzing, you know, she's a literacy specialist. So anytime that we're doing anything that has to do with reading or phonics or anything like that, she's sort of analyzing it. And yes. And every once in a while I have to tell her, like, you know, take your school hat off and just be mom right now.
Sure. Steve's wife is a French teacher.
Oh.
So, of course she just corrects Steve and me anytime she can.
Well, we live a lifestyle as two teachers, and there are certainly those moments where we are looking at our children's lives from the school perspective, thinking about what they need to do to reach their goals in life, and we think that education is a vital part of that. But there are also those moments where we go, yeah, the school's not really what you need to be focusing on right now. You need to be focusing on your part of your society. Having friends and engaging with people is so much more important sometimes.
Which is a good segue that, you know, both of you, when working with your students, worked in the arts. You both have a passion for them. So Steve just finished the High School Musical for his students. And Troy, you worked as a music teacher. Mm-hmm. How do the arts help our young people?
It needs to be a well-rounded student, a well-rounded person. When I feel like when I grew up in middle school, high school, I was really blessed to be in the scenario that I was. I grew up in central Wisconsin. And the school that I went to, the high school at least, it was totally normal for me to be, you know, on a Friday during the fall, to be standing in the baritone section of the top choir and to have my football jersey on because we had a game that night, and for, you know, half of the offensive line to be standing there with me. Or in the wintertime, it was same thing with, you'd see the hockey jerseys and basketball jerseys in the band or the choir or theater program. It was just something where it was highly encouraged and supported really well, that the, you know, oftentimes the top smartest students were the top athletes and the ones in the arts programs and language programs and, you know, National Honor Society.
Why is that?
You know, I, at the time it just seemed normal to me.
Sure.
I wasn't really, you know, thinking specifically about it. I don't know if it was specifically our community or if our school was an anomaly. One of the things that I'm kind of disappointed that I see a lot today, especially with kids' sports, is this idea that you have to pick one thing and specialize in it at, you know, 7 years old. If you're playing t-ball when you're seven, now you're playing 100 t-ball games a year and you're going to national competitions all over the country.
Sure.
And that's all you're doing. And I think that is horrible, horribly disserving to the kids.
We basically have taken this approach that they have to specialize in something
horrible
for, you know, 2 or 3 years. And by that time, they may have burned out. The joy that they had initially.
Or, or in the kids sports too, there's, Tommy John surgery. Mm-hmm. That's a baseball injury. Pitchers have it as, like, in the major leagues.
Sure.
And it's, you know, you can look at the trends. Tommy John surgery is happening to, you know, 15-year-olds.
Sure.
That normally wouldn't happen until they're, you know, maybe 29, 32, something like that. And it's, I really don't like the way that's progressing.
We've sort of moved, and almost anything has become a mini specialization and mini professionalization.
Yeah.
You know, you're not just a soccer player. You're a professional soccer player. Yeah.
When you're 11.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know what? I will absolutely point the finger at parents and say that is on us all, that we're trying to make them grow up too fast and push them into scenarios. And I think parents too, so often are, you know, trying to live out whatever goals they weren't able to hit. And I will say this, I will say that oftentimes it's not parents being negligent. Mm-hmm. It's them trying to offer every opportunity they can,
sure,
trying to give their children situations, scenarios, opportunities that maybe they didn't, but a lot of times it's over the top.
And we live in a blessed time, and so we have the resources available to achieve many of those things. And for that could be a good segue to this one. You know, what are your hopes for your children, and how do they differ than maybe the hopes your parents had for you?
I think it's really interesting. My oldest son right now is 6 years old.
Okay.
If you ask him, and this has been true for probably the last 2 years, if you ask him what he wants to be when he grows up, he will tell you a crossing guard.
Okay.
He thinks that's the coolest thing in the world. He wants to be a crossing guard. So, okay. So I'm sitting here going, do I want my child to be, you know, lifelong achiever as a crossing guard? It's totally fine to be a crossing guard. So if he's going to be a crossing guard, I want him to be the best crossing guard in the world. That's what I'm looking for. And so all that I want to do is make sure that we can provide a great family upbringing to create excellent people in our society. And however that takes shape, I'm fine with. Sure. I'm not looking at this going, hey, I'm in real estate. I need to be able to one day toss the keys to my boys. That's not at all. If they want to do that, that's fine. That's great. Mm-hmm. If they want to go into education, that's great. If they want to, you know, become a crossing guard, that's great.
Sure.
Just go and do it at a high level and be an amazing person. That's, you know, that's what I'm looking for.
Being the best at what you choose to do.
Exactly.
And even being the best doesn't mean that you have to be the James of what
right.
you do. You still can be successful.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a whole lot of other people in the NBA making a whole lot that aren't named LeBron James, and that's okay.
Exactly. You're still in the NBA at that point.
That's right.
How can our listeners find out more information about you and your podcast?
Probably the easiest way, yourdads.com is our website. We are on all of the regular places where everybody gets all of their podcasts, just like this one, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and all those places. We are on Instagram at Your Dad's Podcast. But yeah, easiest way is probably just to head over to yourdads.com. The whole archive is there.
Wonderful. Thank you, Troy, for joining us. And we will definitely be tuning into your podcast, Your Dad's Podcast. This is very confusing to me, but it's plural, not possessive, Your Dad's Podcast. It's all about dads.
Okay, so I have to chime in on that one because that is a topic of conversation. So it is plural, not possessive, because we are your dads. It's not belonging to your dad. Trust me, I'm a grammar nerd myself. So we had some discussion on that one.
I figured that one out. I totally understood from just the title what this podcast was all about. That's wonderful. So once again, I want to thank our guest, Troy Jaster from the Your Dad's Podcast, for coming in and telling us about his perspective on how podcasting works and how parenting works and how being a dad works. Thank you so much, Troy. I don't know, Chip, I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we are ready for spring break next week, by the way, in my school. So I am looking forward to next week's show. It's going to be a lot more relaxing than this week. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm cast member Chet Passon-Close, Steve.
We'll see you in the future.